Welcome back. It's the second hour of Issues Etc. Today, this Tuesday, it's January the 14th, and it is live, and that's why we're doing open lines for the next hour. In the last hour of the program, Pastor Tom Baker joins us, host of Law and Gospel. We begin part one of a six-part weekly series on Martin Luther's Heidelberg Disputation, the first thesis of that disputation. And to just listen carefully, the law of God, the most salutary doctrine of life, cannot advance a man on his way to righteousness, but rather hinders him. So how can the law be both a doctrine of life and a hindrance to righteousness? We'll find out from Tom Baker from 5 to 6 today. Our phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. While I'm mentioning things coming up, before I get to something that I wanted to lay on the table for you to react to, tomorrow on the program, Who is God? Dr. Ken Sherb of Zion Lutheran Church in Moberly, Missouri will be our guest to answer that question. We'll also talk with Pastor Eric Rotman again. He's co-author of that Issues Etc. Book of the Month, To All Eternity, The Essential Teachings of Christianity. We'll talk to him about the Apostles' Creed. Yesterday we were speaking with him about the Ten Commandments. And then Wesley Smith will join us from the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. We will talk about an Australian doctor who is planning to build a euthanasia machine. Now we will no longer be talking about physician-assisted suicide, but just perhaps using the machine. No one assists. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. The phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. A little update on Governor George Ryan and what religious leaders are saying. I'll share that with you. It appeared in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. They say he acted with mercy when he commuted the death sentences of 167 death row inmates. But before that, you have been hearing, doubtless, about war protests. This is nothing new. War protests, well, there are whole organizations whose reason for existence is to protest any war anywhere, period. Many of them are centered here in the United States. Some of them are international. And all of us at least have seen the images of the popular war protests of the 1960s and 70s during the Vietnam era. Those war protests, in many ways, formed kind of the, rite of passage for a whole generation of Americans. They remember themselves and they hope to be remembered for the fact that they were, as many of them will boast, the generation that stopped the war. I would beg to differ. I didn't think that the war protests stopped the war. I think what stopped the war was the fact that we lost it. You generally tend to leave when you lose, and we did. Now, whether or not those protests led to that outcome can be debated. Here we have protests today, not during a war, but in advance of a war. In fact, I heard an interview yesterday, a roundtable interview of journalists and other activists. And during this interview, one of the activists said, today, the war protest organizations are far more advanced than they were in the 60s and the 70s. Now, we begin protesting war before it happens. We don't wait until after it happens. In fact, it was pointed out that during the Vietnam War, there were not many protests until the war turned against us. Then the protests began. There was also a draft, which I think contributed probably significantly to people's desire to protest the war. Now, this is not just a hippie thing. This is not just a baby boomer thing. I have spoken to Korean War veterans who had children during the time of the Vietnam War who were of draftable age. And they have told me they didn't want their sons to go to Vietnam. And some of them have told me in quieter moments that they would have even encouraged quietly their son to skip the country if called up for the draft during Vietnam. This isn't just a hippie thing. This isn't just a boomer thing. Today's war protests, however, are slightly different. Whereas in the 60s and the 70s, the war protests were a cross-section of people, largely young people, largely college-aged students, largely men who were eligible for the draft and feared having to go, or simply thought the war was wrong or unwinnable. And then there were the radicals who had other ideas and simply used war protest to further their agenda. Mixed in there were the religious types, in particular, Christians. One of them was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Not a war protester per se, but a pacifist. No doubt about that. I don't say that with any derogatory tones. He was consistent in this. In his memory, on January 20th in Washington, D.C., at the Washington National Cathedral, sponsored by the Episcopal Diocese of Washington, Sojourners Children Defense Fund, Call to Renewal, National Council of Churches of Christ, USA, there will be a special service. I have the flyer right in front of me. Along the side of the flyer, a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. made at the National Cathedral shortly before his assassination, March 31st, 1968. And the flyer reads, "We invite you to pray and act for peace and justice, a Martin Luther King Jr. Day service in Washington, D.C. And along with this, I am told, is a planned protest on the Mall of the Capitol. And they're talking about hundreds of thousands of people to protest the war that is coming, or that we think is coming, in conjunction with the celebration of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The service begins at 2:30, and after the service, at 4 o'clock, a procession to the White House, followed by a prayer vigil. Should Christians protest the war? We've talked about just war before. We will talk about it again. Christians protest abortion. Christians protest the abuse of religious freedom. Christians protest the abuse of human rights. If a Christian believes that this war in particular, the one that seems to be in the making, is either immoral, unjust, uncalled for, or unwinnable, should that Christian protest the war? Christians feel free to protest other things, sometimes vociferously. What do you think? The phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And I guess I'm talking here about not just kind of your lefty Christians, the National Council of Churches type Christians, who protest virtually everything. SUVs, smokestacks, fossil fuels, fur, you name it, they'll protest it. But I'm talking about you, the mainline Christian, the person who has some serious qualms about this war. We've had conversations here at the studio about whether or not the war, the preemptive war on Iraq, is justified. Not whether it's just yet. We can't get there until the war actually begins. You can't talk about a just war unless you have a war to deal with. But is it justified? Is there evidence? Some of us disagree. We're all Christians. If the war isn't justified, should Christians protest it? Out on the streets? Maybe on the Mall of the Capitol? Maybe walking from the prayer vigil to the White House? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. The World Council of Churches, back in October, issued a statement. Preemptive war against Iraq would be illegal, immoral, and unwise. The National Council of Churches, closely associated, sent leaders on a mission to Iraq. They returned on the 3rd of January and issued a report. A 13-member religious leaders mission to Iraq returns to the United States January 3rd after witnessing a 20-year legacy of suffering in Iraq among civilians, especially children, and burdened with the knowledge that war would further deepen that suffering. Terming preemptive war immoral, illegal, and theologically illegitimate, the group contends that a war against Iraq would result in widespread suffering and death for innocent people and would make the U.S. less secure, not more secure. Dr. Bob Edgar said, "Ours is a religious and not a political delegation. We came as humanitarian inspectors, not weapon inspectors." The group's four-day itinerary included visits to schools, hospitals, churches, mosques, and humanitarian aid agencies. Dr. Edgar is the General Secretary of the National Council of Churches and a United Methodist minister. What do you think? Now, they've come back, and the National Council of Churches is one of the key organizers of war protests in the United States. And I'm just talking about the big ones in Washington, D.C. They're working everywhere, and they admit it completely. There's no conspiracy going on here. They admit that they are working to see grassroots protest of this war wherever they can have it. Do they have any business doing this? Should Christians protest a war? We protest other things. They issued a statement in December. Religious civic leaders form Keep America Safe, Win Without War. A broad coalition of leaders of religious and civic organizations announced here today, that is in Washington, D.C., I read from a press release, the launching of a movement titled Keep America Safe, Win Without War. They will seek to bring the case of alternative action to stop Iraqi militarism without resorting to American militarism. Coalition members include the National Council of Churches, General Secretary Bob Edgar, Jim Wallace of Sojourners. This is the same group that is putting together the invitation to pray and act for peace and justice. Peace is good. Justice is great. And here in the LA Times, today, a commentary, religion must lead the charge in questioning war. And you know what? If that's all there is, just this simple headline, I agree. I think Christians of all people, and when I read religion, I'm going to put myself in that category as a Christian. Christians of all people ought to question the justness of any war. And they ought to come up with an answer to that question, and they should act on it, don't you think? I'll read a little bit of that commentary for you a little bit later. The phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Dennis is calling from his car. Dennis is first up here on Open Lines Issues, etc. Welcome, Dennis.
Yes, Todd, first of all, I'd like to say that I really appreciate your program. I almost never disagree with anything with what you have to say, but I take exception to the fact that that you said we were disaffected with the Vietnam War because we were losing it. And the fact of the matter is that the U.S. forces and their allies, well, the U.S. forces at least, never lost one significant encounter in 7 years of combat there.
Well, would you say we won that war?
Well, we didn't win it. It was called Vietnamization. President Nixon got elected partly on turning the conflict back over to the allies that we had helped prop up. And by the late 1972, virtually all combat troops were gone. And I was there in 68 to 70. But by 72, it was just about done with for U.S. combat forces.
All right. I want to keep you here for just a second, Dennis. First of all, let me clarify. I did not, what I said was a lot of the protests began after the war started to turn against us. That's what I said. And I said the reason we left Vietnam is because we lost it, not, or the reason that the war ended was because we lost it, contrary to the claims of the protesters who say that their protests ended the war. They may have indirectly ended the war by demoralizing our troops. Who knows? You were there. Were you demoralized by American protests?
Was I?
Yeah.
I was a little disgusted with it, but I wasn't demoralized by it.
All right. What do you think about the Christian protesting war today? In particular, the war on Iraq that seems to be in the offing.
Well, some of them are doing it in good conscience, but I think that the liberal Christian churches, I really don't pay much attention to what they say, because it almost seems like they're doing it out of a more of a political agenda, or I really don't have much respect for them in the first place.
Dennis, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. All right, there's someone who was there during Vietnam, said it was a little disgusting to have the war protests at home. Hey, maybe you were one of those who was out there on the street with the sign. And maybe you were one of those who was out there protesting. Maybe you're old enough now to have kids who were of draftable age or serviceable age. Do you think Christians should protest a war if they find it unjust, unjustified, immoral, unnecessary? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. From the National Council of Churches, there was a press statement made the 3rd of January. This is the press statement that was made by this group of activists who went over to Iraq to look at things. And when they came back, they issued this statement called Sowing the Seeds of Peace. Now, I want to put this in perspective for you, if I could. According to all indications, I'm no expert on foreign policy, I'm no expert on Iraq. But according to all indications that I see, the situation in Iraq, and I'm not talking about the military situation, I'm talking about the domestic situation in Iraq. The situation in Iraq is abysmal. People who even oppose the war say that if you had to classify Saddam Hussein as a leader, he is a Stalinist dictator. They say he gets his playbook straight from Stalin. He has a secret police. Everyone is bugged. It is a police state. There's no doubt about it. This is why the inspectors are having such a hard time getting interviews with scientists by themselves, because everyone has a minder. That's what they call them, minders. Someone from the state police, they're in the interview to make sure that the scientist, when interviewed, doesn't say anything. There is no religious freedom. There are no civil rights. The courts, the judicial system, do not exist in the same sense as we do. We're not talking about due process. We're not talking about right to a fair trial. I'm not propagandizing. I'm simply saying this is one of the last bastions, sad to say. There are still others. This is one of the last bastions of this kind of state in the world. Now, Bob Edgar from the National Council of Churches can go over there, visit schools, mosques, public places, humanitarian facilities. They didn't go where they wanted to go. They went where the Iraqi government allowed them to go, saw what the government allowed them to see. This is what they say when they come back. We are a delegation of 13 religious leaders and experts visiting Iraq under the auspices of the National Council of Churches. Ours is a religious and not a political delegation. We came to see the faces of the Iraqi people so that the American people can see the faces of children laughing and singing and also hurting and suffering. We brought with us dozens of pictures drawn by American children. We shared these pictures with Iraqi children, who in turn gave us messages to take back to the children of the United States. We are called by God to be peacemakers, says the statement. War is not inevitable and can be averted even at this moment. President Bush reiterated on New Year's Eve his desire to reach a peaceful conclusion to this crisis, and we are grateful for his words. We came as humanitarian inspectors, not weapon inspectors. We visited schools and hospitals and saw for ourselves the devastating impact of 12 years of sanctions on the people of Iraq. They have yet to mention anything about a police state, anything about the abysmal state of human rights, civil rights, religious rights. The problem, they say, 12 years of sanctions. Now, you don't want a war with Iraq, but what do you want? If 12 years of sanctions have made this country what it is today, according to the National Council of Churches, what do they call for? We're not going to have war. Let's have more sanctions. So let's make it a worse place than it already is. We touched babies suffering illness that can be prevented by proper medication currently unavailable to the people of Iraq. We held the cold hands of children in unheated schools with broken windows and underpaid teachers, nurses, and doctors. We worshiped with Iraqi Christians and in the presence of Muslims, and we prayed with both. This is the birthplace of Abraham, the father of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. We acknowledge and celebrate our oneness in God. We attended a New Year's Eve Mass at a Catholic church and a potluck dinner at a Presbyterian, a potluck that would be immediately familiar to American Christians. On the streets and in informal settings, we experienced the spontaneous warmth, hospitality, and openness of the Iraqi people. We feel privileged and honored by these human relationships. Now they go on to say, we have concluded that we are opposed to this war because a war against Iraq will make the U.S. less secure, not more secure. Because widespread suffering and death will result for innocent people. And because preemptive war is immoral and illegal, it is theologically illegitimate and profoundly violates our Christian beliefs and religious principles. They conclude there saying, as disciples of Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, we know this war is completely antithetical to his teachings. Jesus taught peace, justice, hope, and reconciliation, and rejected revenge, war, death, and violence. They're protesting the war. They will be on Watch Your Televisions January 20th. You will see it. CNN, MSNBC, if it's still around, Fox News, they will all be there. The cameras will be there. I'm sure C-SPAN will cover it as well. It may even be the top story Monday, January 20th, beyond the celebration of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Washington, D.C. at the National Cathedral, a great war protest. And as usual, there'll be people who will number, some will say there were hundreds of thousands, others will claim a million. It always goes this way, doesn't it? And someone will say, wait a minute, people are protesting this war. And leading the charge will be, already, the National Council of Churches. People who are doing this, as they say, not for political reasons, but for religious reasons. What do you think about this? Should Christians protest this war if they believe it to be, as many of these do, believe it to be unjust, unjustified, immoral, illegitimate? Because we do protest other things, don't we? We publicly protest other things that we consider to be unjustified, immoral, and unjust. 505-7850-1800-730-2727. It's open lines. We've got a minute before this break. When we come back from this break, we will be taking your phone calls, and I hope that those of you who are waiting on the line will be patient with us. 505-7850-1800-730-2727. A couple other things that I will bring before your attention after we take the phone calls on the other side of the break, namely this update on what religious leaders are saying about Governor Ryan and his commutation of death sentences before he left office, 167 in all death sentences, not overturned per se, but commuted to life in prison. And religious leaders say, at least in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, he acted with mercy. 505-7850-1800-730-2727. When we come back, we'll take your calls.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
What role do the Ten Commandments have in the Christian life? Do the Ten Commandments require perfect obedience from a pure heart? Or is it enough that we simply do the best we can? You'll find answers to these questions and more in a great new book called To All Eternity, The Essential Teachings of Christianity. If you'd like to receive this great new resource, call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours at 1-800-325-3040. That's 1-800-325-3040. Or order online. Go to our Issues Etc. website at issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find a link to Concordia Publishing House. Call Monday through Friday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for this great new book, To All Eternity, The Essential Teachings of Christianity, 1-800-325-3040.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. Republican leaders in the Senate plan to take it slow when it comes to abortion legislation. But in the House, it's a different matter. The leadership there is making pro-life legislation a priority. David Brody gives us a rundown of the bills under consideration by the House GOP.
As a pro-life president, George W. Bush wants to see the House pass a ban on partial birth abortion, but party leaders plan to go above and beyond that. Apparently, the Dennis Hastert-Tom DeLay team is considering at least five bills that would crack down on abortion. John Feary is the spokesman for Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert.
There's a very solid pro-life majority in the House, and you're going to see the House work on those types of legislation.
So what bill could be up first?
When it comes to cloning, you'll see that the House moved very quickly on laws to ban cloning of human beings.
But even though pro-life bills are near the top of the priority list, that doesn't guarantee success.
The House for years has passed pro-life legislation and just watched it die in the Senate, and we are hopeful that that won't happen now.
Gabe Neville is a spokesman for Congressman Joe Pitts. He's hopeful because Republicans are now in control of the Senate, so there's a good chance that those bills will come up. Still, with a possible war on the horizon, the pro-life train could be slowed a little.
We will have competing claims on Congress time, but these things are important, and leadership thinks they're important, and they will certainly make pro-life legislation a priority.
And with exit polls showing abortion was the top issue on many voters' minds during the midterm elections, you can be sure lawmakers are feeling pressure to satisfy their base. For Family News in Focus, I'm David Brody in Washington.
The leadership is also considering a ban on partial birth abortion, a parental notification law, protection for the unborn from violence while in the womb, and a law that prevents faith-based hospitals from being forced to perform abortions. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
According to the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, 28 out of 37 studies published in worldwide medical literature report a substantially increased risk of breast cancer for women who choose an induced abortion, in addition to the risk level a specific woman would normally expect given her family history. Shouldn't every woman considering elective abortion be made aware of this risk factor? Why then the deafening silence on the issue on the part of America's medical community? If women have a right to choose, then surely they also have a right to know all the information pertaining to that choice. For Focus on the Family, I'm Dr. Julie Parton.
We are all witnesses to 30 years of legalized abortion. Sanctity of Human Life Week is January 19th through the 26th. For more information, call 1-800-THE-LETTER-A. Family.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Halfway through this hour of open lines, we'll go to the phones right away. The phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. First up, Sandy calling from Alton. Hi, Sandy. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Just some comments about your subjects. One, do Christians have, are they entitled or have the right to protest, I guess, anything in society that they feel have a notion to? And in the kingdom of the left, sure, they sure do, you know, even as misguided as this incident, these incidents are coming to be. I disagree with them. I believe that if you're in agreement with President Bush's view that we will be after and go after and topple those powers that be, like Saddam and others, that are harboring, training, funding worldwide terrorism and a threat to that portion of the world, plus the rest of the free world, is quite justifiable.
Okay, so
the war is.
The war is justifiable.
Yes.
If you were one who, for whatever reasons, and there are many, of course, Sandy, who believed it to be unjustifiable. Let's say you had a neighbor who said, I believe it to be unjustifiable.
Sure.
Would you say to them, then, you know, you ought to be protesting this? Because if I believed it was unjustifiable, I would protest it too.
I would disagree and try to give them a different position as to why. But, you know, why I would disagree. But absolutely, they have the right to protest during Vietnam. Kind
well, of I'm like... not talking about the right, Sandy. And I don't want to interrupt you, but because
sure.
The right is not in dispute. The question is the ought of this thing. And that is, Christians feel a moral obligation to protest a lot of things, and
sure, they
do. And their right is never in question. Well, some would question, of course, but
sure,
the right is not in question. What is should they do it? What would you say to the person then?
That is their own personal, personal morality speaking. There's nothing biblically specific about, marching or protesting. My goodness, back in the 60s, many solid Christians, you had activism against segregation, which was completely, an issue that needed attention. Of course, there was violence that was associated with it, too, but these things had to end in our society. And I would be in agreement with not the violence, of course, but absolutely. And I would be in agreement with a Christian from their own personal viewpoint. I would disagree with that in light of what 9/11 has done and stands for and what the whole future of our nation and the free world.
Now, you had something else you wanted to say as well?
About Vietnam, you had a caller and we're discussing some of the issues, and I highly respect anybody who served over in Vietnam. My husband was Europe side during that time, so we were, very pro-military. However, we did lose that. you had asked, did we lose it? It wasn't even designed. The policy was never designed to win. If you go back, prior to the onset of when the buildup began, Dean Rusk, Secretary of State, McNamara, they were the architects of the containment policy.
Right. And what did you think of the protests?
Yes.
Given the fact that your husband was stationed in Europe, what did you think of the protests during that time?
Well, we were not pleased with it. We weren't pleased. However, being in Europe, we were bonded as far as military perspective. And, I think as we finally found out that this containment was never designed to go beyond containment. It was a politicized war. Going back further in history, if you agree that it was justified, it was a justifiable cause to prevent the old domino theory of communism, the tyranny, brutality, and atheistic form of government from taking over Southeast Asia. You've got to go back after the Second World War and look at some of the history and what unfolded there.
Sandy, thank you so much
for the
call. Okay. So, Sandy would leave it to the individual morality of the Christian if they believe the war to be unjust, whether or not they ought to protest it. There are people who protest abortion who say, if you're not out there on the picket line, you are not living up to your moral obligation. Would you, if you're one of those, would you say the same thing if you believe that the war is wrong? If you're not out there on the picket line, would you accuse people of not living up to their moral obligation? Fellow Christians. By the way, we will be discussing just war with Dr. John Johnson, president of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, on Tuesday, January the 28th, during Issues Etc. Look forward to that. Andy is calling from Kirkwood. Andy, thank you for being patient, and welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, you had asked if somebody was out there that had protested the Vietnam War to give a call, and I did, and here I am.
All right. Why did you protest?
Well, this began, of course, I began to notice Vietnam in 67. In 68, I supported the candidacy of Senator Eugene McCarthy, who was challenging Lyndon Johnson at the time. His candidacy then opened the road for Robert Kennedy's candidacy. And when he got shot, we ended up with Hubert Humphrey as the Democratic candidate, and Richard Nixon beat him by a very slim margin on the premise that he had a secret plan to end the war in Vietnam. By 69, I was one who had never trusted Nixon, and that came, I suppose, from a long family history of members of the Democratic Party. But it became obvious to me, or it seemed to be obvious to me, that promises to end the war in Vietnam were not coming true. Instead, the war had been expanded into Cambodia and Laos. And so when the opportunity to protest came along, I did.
Did you do it for the National Council of Churches today says that they're protesting and planning protests for the upcoming war in Iraq. based upon religious, not political reasons. Would you typify your protest in Vietnam the same way, or would you just say it was for political reasons?
You know, when you're young, you don't understand some things about religion. And at the time, we thought, well, Jesus says, blessed is the peacemakers, we want to make peace. Now, of course, I understand that to be that Jesus wanted to say that those who help make peace between God and man are blessed. So there was some, I suppose, self-righteousness in this, but there was also genuine and intellectual concern that the government wasn't doing, wasn't living up to the ideals, really, of the United States. And at the time, an LCMS pastor had written a piece, and he received an award for it from the American Legion, saying essentially that Christians should not protest the war, that that violated the teachings of St. Paul in regard to supporting the government that God had given us. And I wrote a kind of an op-ed piece that got published in the local paper saying that I was glad that within Christianity we could disagree and still both remain good Christians, but that I felt that the U.S. was a very different kind of government in which people were supposed to express their viewpoints and challenge the government where they felt it was going wrong.
Now, this is interesting because you have kind of delineated the real question here that I've been laid on the table, okay? And this is it. If a Christian believes the war to be unjust, do they have the moral obligation to protest it? Not the right, but because really what we're talking about here is the question of justice in this war has to be answered first, and then the Christian says, if it's a just war, then Romans 13 says, I simply let the governmental authority do what they think is best if the war is just, if the cause is just. If it's unjust, then, of course, as Americans, we do have the right to protest. What do you think about the war protest today being led largely from religious sectors?
I have a difficult time today because that would not be my take on it. My take on it would be, does the government know more than it's letting on that it knows? Can I trust the people who are in authority? Back at Vietnam time, I didn't feel that I could, and that fact has been borne out by the repentant apologies of Secretary of State McNamara under Lyndon Johnson and the tapes that we have of Lyndon Johnson himself, for example, saying that they knew all along that they were doing a pretty bad job of leadership in the war in Vietnam. But we don't know, of course, in the current instance. I don't know what President Bush knows. I don't have any idea what the real circumstances are. All you know is what you read in the papers, and the papers don't always accurately reflect what's going on.
Andy, thank you so much for the call, and I'm glad to hear from a former Vietnam War protester. You know, I often wonder, I was too young to protest. The only thing, I'll be honest with you folks, the only thing I knew of the Vietnam War when I was a child was the bracelets. The missing in action bracelets, the POW bracelets. We all wore them. You know, my parents shielded me, as parents ought to, from the horrors of what was going on and who these men were and what they were suffering. They did tell me these men were in trouble and they needed our prayers. So we wore the bracelets, and that was about as much as I knew. Maybe I gathered stuff that I don't remember anymore. And I've often wondered to myself, had I been of age, would I have been a protester? And I ask myself that question again today because we're on the verge of another war. It may happen, it may not, but if it does, there are those who are already preemptively protesting a preemptive war. If a Christian judges a war to be unjustified or immoral, should they protest it? And I mean protest it by all the means that are open to us as American citizens in this free society to protest. Write the letters, go out on the street, hang the sign in the back of your car, put the sign out on the front porch. This goes to this confusion that I have often observed and often spoken of here, this confusion among evangelical Christians, conservative Christians, between conservative politics and theology. Now, Andy's perspective on the government has changed considerably in the last 30, 40 years. And he freely admits that at the time he didn't trust what the government was up to, and now he tends to give our government the benefit of the doubt with regard to the war that seems to be being planned. You know, there are a lot of evangelical Christians who don't trust their government. They fly the flag, but then they'll tell you as soon as you start to talk to them about America, that America is going to hell in a handbasket, that there are conspiracies to take over the world, and some of them are even being hatched right here in America by our elected officials. It's kind of an odd thing, this patriotism mixed with conspiracy and conspiratorial distrust of government. All of us have got a little streak of this in us, don't we? Talking about war protests. What do you think about the National Council of Churches going to Baghdad and coming back saying, you know, what we saw was a sad situation, and what we concluded was 12 years of sanctions against this country has made it a miserable place to live. And they do not once in their entire statement. Let me grab this thing one more time. Where is it? Here it is. They do not once in their entire statement, as far as I can tell, the National Council of Churches, having returned with 13 religious leaders in Baghdad, they came back the January 3rd. Not one time in their entire statement do they mention the name of Saddam Hussein or the fact that perhaps he might be liable, at least in part, for the misery of his people. I would ask, where are the protests against Saddam Hussein? I promised I would get to this, and I have it right in front of me. Religious leaders say Ryan acted with mercy. Governor George Ryan's decision to empty the state's death row drew mixed emotions from area religious leaders. The Reverend Benjamin Kelly, pastor at St. James Church of God in Christ in Madison, said someone must have been praying those safe little prayers for death row inmates. Kelly said that Ryan's act was one of mercy. Quote, if you want someone to have mercy for you, you have to give mercy to them, Kelly said. And that was what Ryan did. The Reverend Paul Schiple, a retired United Church of Christ minister from Centralia, said that Ryan's decision was a moral and just thing to do. It's the only thing he could do given the circumstances, Schiple said. I think it behooves us now to be prayerful and thankful. Schiple, who listened to Ryan's speech on the radio, said he was pleased with the whole speech. Quote, he went into such detail on a number of cases. He did not base anything on emotion. It was based on having looked at the cases. Now, wait, did he look at all 167 cases and decide that none of those capital crimes deserved the death penalty? He based his entire decision on the error-prone, he called it even the demon of error that he says affects the capital system. He based it entirely upon the fact that innocent people die. And I ask, like I did yesterday, if half of these people are innocent, why doesn't he give them new trials? And why didn't he pardon half of them if he'd looked at the cases? Oh, wait a minute. That would have put them back on the street. Maybe he knows better. Did you happen to see the AMA Awards last night? Was it last? Yes, it was last night. American Music Association, is that the name of the organization? It was really interesting. It was hosted, as far as I could tell, because these things are so poorly planned and so poorly executed. All these awards shows seem to be directed by chimps. But I think it was hosted by the Osbournes, if I'm not mistaken. I saw an awful lot of Ozzy Osbourne and his wife, who I will say, despite the fact that the show is drivel, she's a beautiful woman for her age. She's held up much better than Ozzy has. And their kids. I noticed two things about these AMA awards. Everyone was wearing black, except Britney Spears for some reason. Everyone else was up there in black. I don't know what that was about. Maybe they were all imitating the Osbournes. They were all in various shades of black. According to the Associated Press, Sheryl Crow, an activist for recording artist rights, brought her own message against a possible war with Iraq at the American Music Awards. That's what it is, the American Music Awards. Crow accepted her award for pop female recording artist, wearing a white t-shirt emblazoned with the message, "War is not the answer," in sequence. She had the V-neck t-shirt specially made. I think she did it with her bedazzler. Is that what they call those things? The dazzlers? I just think there's a really vital sweeping peace movement out there that's not getting covered in the press. So I just kind of try to do my part, she said backstage. In typical female pop rock artist ease. I think war is based on greed, and there are huge karmic retributions that will follow. I think war is never the answer to solving any problem. The best way to solve problems is not to have enemies, she said. That's Sheryl Crow. It doesn't sound that different from the National Council of Churches. Pat Boone was there. Did you see him? Pat Boone. And he apparently lived next door to the Osbournes for some time. Maybe that explains his ill-fated and ill-timed flirting with heavy metal. Remember this? About 3 years ago? My goodness. I'm glad he's back to wearing normal clothes. The show was peppered with about as much bleeps and deletions as one could possibly fit into television. And it was, of course, I think this was MTV. No, was this on network television? Bleeping everywhere. Half of what Ozzy said went completely silent because all you got was the ands, the thes, the buts, and the ors. And his wife, too. His children seemed to not have the same kind of potty mouth as their parents, but then again, they were reading from scripts written by producers. And the other stars, of course, had to join in as well. The awards reunited Pat Boone and his former Beverly Hills neighbor, the Osbournes. I think the Osbournes have said, "I'm the best neighbor they ever had." Actually, what Ozzy said was, "the best blanking neighbor he ever had." My children have to watch this television. He said, "maybe they call me that because I'm the only one that never called the police." They're great friends, and we get along great. Boone, who is a darling of, remember, Boone is a darling of many of the old-time Christian folks. Boone said he approached Ozzy Osbourne at the show and asked if they could do a duet on one of Osbourne's songs. He and Sharon both enthusiastically said yes, so that there may be an Osbourne-Boone duet in the offing. "I hope," said Boone. "I'm just afraid someone will beat me to it," he said. Look, when you find a rising star, hit your wagon to it and it will take you wherever it's going. And there's no doubt about it, Ozzy Osbourne, for the second time in his life, is a rising star in our pop culture, and Pat Boone will not miss the opportunity. I wonder what his former Christian fans think of this. You know what I mean? Good old squeaky clean Pat Boone saying, "I'd like to do a duet with Ozzy Osbourne," a man who cannot speak more than three syllables without expletives. I thought it was interesting. I stayed until Shania Twain did her live performance, and then I went downstairs and played computer games, further corrupting my brain. I'd already, already started, for heaven's sakes. Might as well finish the job. The phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I have some other things to share with you, and many of them are too long. Maybe we'll share them in later open lines. Did you know that partial birth abortions are up? Did you know, for you WHO fans, Pete Townsend has been arrested for child porn? My producer told me he was gay. I didn't even know this. I just thought he was a very skilled guitarist. And I thought his solo career was even better than his career with The Who. Apparently, he was arrested under the Protection of Children Act after executing two searches at a business and a home in Richmond, Surrey, outside of London, where he lives. He He says he was just researching his childhood abuse. And on that line, sexual abuse crisis apparently has now touched every single diocese in the U.S., priestly pedophilia, ephebophilia, whatever you want to call it, and now the cases involve over 1,200 priests. That's a lot of clergy. Now, I want you to stay tuned, because when we come back, we are going to be beginning a six-part series. This is significant. There are some series that we do on issues, etc. All of them are significant, of course, but there are some that stand kind of head and shoulders above the others because they deal with subjects that are so vital to a right understanding of God's Word. The one that's coming up in the next hour is precisely that kind of a series. We're going to have Pastor Tom Baker here in Studio A with us live. It'll be a six-part weekly series, and we're going to be doing it on Martin Luther's one of the most important writings of Luther that often, sad to say, goes unnoticed. It's called the Heidelberg Disputation. It's just a series of, during Luther's scholastic period, he's writing theses and giving scriptural proofs, and it's kind of hard to wade through because it's old. It's written in kind of a shorthand theological terminology. But by the time we're done with this, we will see what Luther is driving at, and that is the distinction between a theology of glory and a theology of the cross. But we must begin by talking about the origin of true righteousness and what the law does. The thesis we'll be dealing with Pastor Tom Baker, the law of God, the most salutary doctrine of life, cannot advance a man on his way to righteousness, but rather hinders him. How in the world can the law, the Ten Commandments, all the law of God, His will, His decrees and commands and statutes, how can they be both at the same time the most salutary doctrine of life and yet hinder us on our way to righteousness? We'll find out from Pastor Tom Baker after this. Tomorrow on the program, if I can find my sheet, we will be answering the question of who God is. Dr. Ken Sherb will be with us. We'll also talk with Pastor Eric Rotman again, co-author of that book, To All Eternity, Our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month, about the Apostles' Creed, another essential teaching of Christianity. And our good friend Wesley Smith will join us. Apparently, a doctor in Australia is building a euthanasia machine. And now we can talk about not physician-assisted suicide, but what? Mechanically assisted suicide. That's tomorrow on Issues, Etc. When we come back, Pastor Tom Baker and the beginning of our six-part series on the Heidelberg Disputation.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.